The Bundesliga is back after the international break. Bayern Munich came up short in their trip to Sinsheim. How much fault rests on Carlo Ancelotti? Schalke collected 3 more points at home. Are their fans in for another roller coaster season? And RB Leipzig are about to make their Champions League debut. This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis Van Aptorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. Jonathan, take us to the match day.
German Football Federation Division 1, match day 3. Hamburger Sport Club, 0. Lawnball Sports Leipzig, 2. Sport Club Freiburg, 0. Ball Games Club Borussia 09 Dortmund, 0. Club for Physical Exercises Borussia Mönchengladbach, 0. Sports Community Frankfurt United, 1. Football Club Augsburg, 3. First Football Club of Cologne, 0. First Football Club of Mainz 05, 3. Bayer 04 Leverkusen, 1. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football, 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 1. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim, 2. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 0. Hertha Berlin Sport Club, 1. Sport Club Werder Bremen, 1. Football Club Schalke 04, 3. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart, 1.
The biggest result of the match day is arguably Hoffenheim's 2-0 win against Bayern Munich in Sinsheim. Jonathan, this is your topic, so what do you want to talk about in this game?
Well, someone actually asked me before this pod to talk about... I went on a bit of a rant the other day on Twitter after the game because I was just a bit frustrated about how Bayern Munich seemed to get away with these performances. And someone actually messaged me and said, could you elaborate on that on the podcast? And I was more than happy to. I don't need to necessarily rehash an issue that I think has been well discussed. But basically, I think Bayern have planned terribly for this situation. They consistently rely on wingers, Arjen Robben and Franck Ribéry, that are aging, 33 and 34. Cannot be in this situation. They sold Douglas Costa. They've got Kingsley Coman, yes, but they don't look well prepared enough. They're continually relying on old players. Carlo Ancelotti doesn't seem to be the manager to take the club into the next direction. I think he was always an interim appointment after a very intense period with Pep Guardiola, but that interim period looks to be coming to a very swift end. I don't think he's got them playing the right kind of football. And they are very much a club that want to not just win, but win well. And they haven't been doing that. Obviously, on the weekend, they didn't even win. So that's a bit of a problem. Make no mistake that in their previous games in the season, they didn't even play particularly well. Leverkusen, if they're a better side with a better striker, they draw that game. Simple. I think the club has to make some much, much better decisions in the future. The Salih Hamacic appointment is a soft one, in my opinion. It gets everybody feeling more Mia San Mia, which is what Hoeneß talked about. But what is the identity of this club? I don't know what the identity of this club is anymore. Interesting that Lewandowski spoke this week in an interview with Spiegel about what is the target fan for a club? Is it someone in Munich? Is it someone in Asia? Is it someone in America? Bayern Munich have to try and get those things right off the field, but right now I'm mostly concerned about the way that things are going on the field. I don't think they've got their game plans right. They've been pretty poor tactically, consistently in the Bundesliga. I'm absolutely furious. I mean, if I'm not even a Bayern fan. They're the biggest team in Germany. They're the biggest and most successful club in Germany, one of the biggest teams in the world, and they're playing some right mediocre football right now, and I don't think anybody's calling them out anywhere near as much as they should be.
Well, I'll call them out as merely as much as they should be. This team obviously lacks the feeling of despair. You saw them come up short 3 times in 2012, and I am still convinced that that is why they won the treble, because they came up short 3 times.
No, they won the treble. They won the treble because Matthias Sammer was in the dugout. Matthias Sammer gets stuff done. He knows how to talk to people the right way. He came in. Jupp Heynckes is a manager that is not a tactical genius. He said the right things at the right time and he got everyone working the right way. But Matthias Sammer was the guy who got everything sorted. He was the one who said, we need to change this approach. We need to start eating together. We need to be more of a team. He was the one who made the difference. Since he left, this club has really struggled. Pep Guardiola made a massive difference to football in Bavaria, but also in Germany as a whole. Bayern Munich have tried very hard, quite obviously in my opinion, to move away from the influence of Pep Guardiola since he was here. That's obviously not working on the pitch. And quite frankly, I'm not sure it's working off it either.
Matt, is Carlo Ancelotti the central issue to Bayern Munich right now? Or does this go deeper, as Jonathan has suggested?
As John was talking about, there is a massive identity clash at the club. One side of it being embodied by Ancelotti and big money signings and almost Galactico levels of signings, similar to Real Madrid back in the day. The other side of it is embodied by Uli Hoeneß and the huge fuss he's made about the opening of this new youth academy, which they spent 70-odd million euros on. Uli Hoeneß has been quoted loads of times saying that he wants to restore some of this Mia San Mia feeling to the club. He doesn't want Bayern to be reliant on massive transfers like you see PSG and other top clubs in Europe spending. They want the next Thomas Müllers, they want the next Philipp Lahm, they want the next local Bavarian talents to play for them. And it's two completely contrasting personalities and contrasting philosophies. I think we saw Ancelotti's philosophy, or perhaps lack of, exemplified perfectly against Hoffenheim, where in the second half he brought on Arjen Robben, he brought on Frank Ribery, he brought on James Rodriguez, obviously Thomas Müller started. Add to that mix Tolisso, Robert Lewandowski, huge stars, big star names, and yet all Hoffenheim had to do was sit there solidly, force them out to the wings consistently and make them put crosses in the box, which they dealt with absolute ease. I can't remember a single, apart from Lewandowski in the first half when he put Thomas Müller's cross just over. There wasn't a single moment where you thought, wow, that was a big chance. Oh, have him out in his header in the second half. It was just crosses. And I think Ancelotti's to blame for that.
I also feel like there's not a lot of even self-scouting going on in Bayern Munich. I don't even think Carlo Ancelotti knows what Thomas Müller's best qualities are. I don't know if he knows what Kingsley Coman's best qualities are. And maybe the fact that Matthias Sammer is not around, it contributes to that.
Yeah, but Bayern Munich can't be the type of club that are in a situation like they're in and say, oh, Matthias Sammer isn't around, that's why we're not getting it done. They have to be prepared for these things. And it's the same way they have to prepare for Robin and Ribery leaving. But they're still in a position where in a Champions League quarterfinal, they have to turn to two guys who are 33 and 34. They have to be put on ice after an hour. That cannot be right. And I agree with Matt's sentiment that they need to turn, or that this clash of cultures is what they're suffering at the moment. Yes, they want to be the club that's producing the next Thomas Müllers because they were the club that produced the first Thomas Müller. But making and building an academy worth 70 million euros doesn't guarantee you talent overnight. It's going to take a long, long time. And Lewandowski said correctly in this interview with Spiegel, Bayern Munich spent 40 million. That's the most Bayern Munich have spent on a player. Like, okay, so Javi Martinez and Tolisso cost that much. 40 million, that's nothing. I'm not saying that Bayern Munich need to go out and spend 200, but they haven't won the Champions League, right? And the sides that are going to win the Champions League have been spending enough money. Now, I'm not saying the money is right or the prices are right, but to be competitive at the moment, if you are one of the top clubs, you need to get involved in buying the right players. It doesn't mean losing your head and going spending 250 million on someone that's not worth it. But how, if you're Bayern Munich, you have to be able to think, you have to be able to know you can attract top talent and not just spend 40 million in a summer. Because, yes, Sebastian Rudi and Niklas Süle were very wise signings. But is this squad going to win the Champions League this season? Not the way they're playing at the moment. Yes, that lies half on the players, but it also lies half on the tactical approach.
Bayern Munich find themselves in a quite unique situation whereby, usually and generally speaking, domestic success is so guaranteed that they can take that for granted, and therefore it all the whole success of the club is based on success internationally, success in the Champions League, but also the style in which they do it. I think Guardiola brought a style which they would have been happy with had the success followed, but obviously it didn't. And Ancelotti was brought in as that man to guarantee that success at any price, regardless of what style that might have been in. Obviously, that hasn't worked either. And now they find themselves a little bit in no man's land. They've tried both options there, and they don't seem to have made any progress. And you do wonder how long Ancelotti will stay there and whether they'll take the direct approach of having already seen Nagelsmann perform the way he has, yes, now three times against them. He's unbeaten against them, a draw and a win last season, and obviously 2-0 on Saturday. with a clear plan, a clear philosophy, a clear way of playing, and nowhere near the talent at his disposal.
Yeah, Hoffenheim obviously are seen as a plastic club for the way that they have been invested in and the kind of structure they've built. But it's clear that they have a plan. And as you both said, Bayern doesn't seem to have a plan at the moment. They don't know who they're targeting. They don't know what they're trying to achieve in the transfer market. And they're not achieving anything at the youth level.
And they have this clash off the pitch of, as Lewandowski was talking about in his Spiegel interview, are they targeting worldwide fans on their Chinese marketing tours, or do they want to be Munich's true love, as they like to sing about?
And I thought that was so interesting that Robert Lewandowski said in that interview, do we need cameras on our beer glasses? Do our wheat beer showers now need to be marketed? I think that, Matt thinks that, lots of people think that, but for the number nine, number one striker of Bayern Munich and one of the best strikers in the world to come out and say that, I think that tells you a lot about where this club is.
I don't think Lewandowski's on his own. Some of these dissenting voices were brewing at the end of last season. If we think back to Bayern's title celebrations at home to Freiburg in their final league
game. Yeah,
that's
what he's talking about. Yeah, exactly.
Lewandowski was referring directly to that. At half time, who was it? Anastasia. I have no idea who she is. But she performed on the pitch at half time as some pop song, which then overran by about 5 minutes, leaving the Freiburg players, who still had Europe to play for at that point, waiting around on the pitch for a pop star to finish her performance. And you had a situation, I believe it was Arjen Robben, spoke directly to Christian Streich, the Freiburg manager, and apologised and said, I'm sorry, this isn't on. And obviously then this was followed by Bayern players running around with selfie sticks on their beer glasses. They have to find this balance, and you do suspect, as Lewandowski's also seems to have realised, that they have gone very much in one direction, which is fine, because you do have to find that balance. You do have to do marketing tours. You do have to internationalise. You do need fans all over the world buying your merchandise and big sponsorship deals. You do need it, but not at the expense of winning football matches. And after three games this season, there's not one in which Bayern Munich have convinced. And they've got Anderlecht in the Champions League this week. If they perform against them, I think everyone can rightly say, well, with all due respect, it's Anderlecht. But there's bigger challenges to come.
This is kind of a weird question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Does Bayern Munich need to lose the Bundesliga title?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think there's certainly an argument to say that with any team with anyone in any walk of life, five years straight success with hardly any competition, yeah, I think there's bound to be people, not just in the first team, but throughout the club, who perhaps take their foot off the gas a bit and start focusing on other aspects of the game.
Jonathan?
I think it would take something bigger. I mean, I think it would be the kind of shift or the kind of change that would come as a result of that kind of news. But I think, a first knockout round exit in the Champions League, I think that's the kind of thing that would wake the club up. I think losing the title, they can be like, wow, okay, we won five in a row, we're not going to win six. I think they'd be like, okay, these things happen. I think it's about how they would lose it, if they don't finish second and how many points they finish adrift. But I think it's very early to talk about that being a possibility, three games. But I think what would wake them up more would be not even being in the quarterfinal of the Champions League, or, to be honest, not even being back in the semifinals, because that's the competition. They are constantly trying to be the best in the world. They constantly talk about being the best in Germany. And if they can't even be close to being the best, one of the best four, you can forget the validity of, tours to China. Because, as Lewandowski said in that interview, this is a key stage of training. You are in a key stage of training in pre-season. And you want me to walk around and take photos? Matt's right. Yeah, you do have to do it. And it's part of football in 2017. And it sells shirts all around the world. But if it's to the absolute cost and at the expense of your star striker being in the right condition, no, not at all.
I thought we'd talk about Domenico Tedesco and Schalke this week, because it seems to be developing into a bit of a rollercoaster ride again in Gelsenkirchen. Tedesco arrived at Schalke with huge plaudits, having actually only managed 11 games in the second division with Erzgebirge Aue. So perhaps that was a little bit premature, but all the hype seemed to be justified after match day one when they put in a stunning performance against RB Leipzig and beat them 2-0. They then went to Hanover the week after and put in completely the opposite performance, losing 1-0 to a newly promoted team. This week, we've just seen them this afternoon, beat Stuttgart 3-1 and very convincingly. So it begs the question, what can Tedesco's Schalke have to offer? What sort of team are they? And how is this going to continue? The one thing that stood out from the two victories against RB and against Stuttgart was the fact that Schalke had significantly less of the ball. And I wonder if that's a trend, not just with Schalke and Tedesco, but also across this new generation of young Bundesliga managers.
You mentioned, obviously you grouped Tedesco and Nagelsmann kind of together by saying this generation of young managers. Of course, Tedesco and Nagelsmann went to school together.
I'd include the likes of Tuchel and Sandro Schwarz and Martin Schmidt and even Jurgen Klopp in that as well.
And the man opposite him in the dugout on the weekend.
Indeed.
But one thing I think you noted that I think is the most important is that they played a lot. They won both of their games with less possession than their opponent. But to me, I don't know if that's the best way to try to win games, because if you are a sit and counter team, then that is a way. I mean, there has been teams that have done that before, like Cologne, but obviously there's kind of a built-in ceiling there. And I think the more important thing is to develop the interplay, to develop, like what Tuchel did, is to basically be really specific about where the ball needs to go and what foot you need to play the ball with, and develop the interplay that way instead of being a sit and counter team.
I don't know. I feel like football's got to a point now where you're literally looking at transition being the most important part of the game. You know, it's so tactical now that seven, eight, nine, 10 seconds after you lose the ball is when you're the most vulnerable. So it's a very strong argument to suggest that actually you can be an extremely good side in transition. You only need 30% of the ball to be good at that. I mean, we've seen it enough last season, let alone this season, and all of the names that we've just talked about. These managers have figured out that games can become so tactical. I mean, you only have to look at Dortmund against Freiburg on the weekend. You know, they're against 10 men. They can have all the interplay that they want. But if you can't find a way through there, it's going to be impossible. You can have 80% possession, which is what I think they had, right? So actually, I think there's quite a lot to be said for approaching a game that way, but it requires an intense amount of concentration, especially defensively, and you need people in defence that can play the ball very quickly. And then defenders become kind of irrelevant in their old form, because actually you need defenders to be like central midfielders and you need your strikers to be like central midfielders.
It also relies upon an opponent who's happy to take the ball and an opponent who wants to play with possession. I think against RB Leipzig, I think Schalke were happy to let them dominate the game and even as a home team play as an away team. Mm. And you could tell straight away that RB weren't as happy in possession as they usually are playing without the ball. I mean, it's a key tenet of the way Ranić and Hasenhüttl lined up their team as well. However, when it came to Schalke having to dictate the game away at Hanover, a promoted team who were quite happy to let them have the ball, they created next to nothing. So it does depend very much on the opposition. If Tedesco manages to restore Schalke to where they feel they belong in European football, I think it's sort of tactics which can probably end up working quite well for them at that level. But the problem might be getting there in the first place, because there's a lot of teams in the Bundesliga who will actually be quite happy to say, no, Schalke, you keep the ball and then show us what you can do.
Well, that's, I think, is the biggest risk, because if you become a transition team, a team that almost relies on transition, then teams can just sit back on you and then force you to keep the ball.
That's
and if
exactly
you don't,
exactly the problem we saw with Dortmund in Freiburg.
But at the same time with Dortmund and Freiburg, I think that Freiburg had to. They're down to 10 men. Of course, they're going to put as many people behind.
Yeah,
the
but
ball.
That's no excuse. 60 minutes. Dortmund, with that quality, you have to score a goal. I don't care. I don't care if you're 10 men behind the ball.
Their finish, I mean, with Dortmund, it came down to their finishing, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, they didn't really create very much. Yeah, there were a couple of chances. I mean, half chances, not really main chances. I know how difficult it is. But with the quality that they had, had to win that game. And Peter Boss said it after the game. He said, I think with a one-man advantage for 60 minutes, Borussia Dortmund have to win this game.
But I think that, like Matt said, the goal is to get back to not only European football, I would even go further. The goal is to get back to the Champions League. Schalke, I think, sees themselves as a Champions League team. They want to, that's how they evaluate their seasons, if they make it back to the Champions League or not. And my question is this the football that they will be able to play to get back to the Champions League?
I think it's probably still too early to say, isn't it? Three games, two very convincing performances, one very unconvincing performance. So let's see next week. But I think it's definitely an interesting one to keep an eye on, because Tedesco comes across extremely well in his interviews and the way he deals with his players, with his colleagues, with the press. He's clearly a very intelligent manager. He clearly has a very set philosophy. But again, yeah, there is it tends to belie that lack of experience, and it tends to cover up the fact that he has only managed now
6 months. As he's only led a top flight team in 6 months,
14 matches now, yeah. Yeah. 14 league matches.
I mean, as Matt says, let's see how we go. But this is Schalke. I think Schalke fans are used to being on a roller coaster ride. 1 week great, 1 week terrible. I think if next week they're terrible, then that tells us everything we kind of need to know about them. Yes, they want to get back to the Champions League, but I think they need to take it step by step. You've got to bear in mind that they're going to lose Goretzka next season, and they're probably going to lose Meyer, although, quite frankly, that's no big loss at the moment. A lot of stepping stones that they have to go over before they get anywhere near top six, let alone top four.
And just like at Bayern, the whole issue of an identity clash is quite obvious, yeah. at Schalke as well. There were huge questions raised about Christian Heidel's transfer policy. Yeah. Obviously, the Herbiter's transfer caused a bit of a storm in Gelsenkirchen. The club legend, the captain, leaving the club, seemingly thrown out by a young manager who, I don't know, potentially didn't want that leadership figure, perhaps competing with his own leadership in the dressing room. Who knows? Tedesco's come out since saying that if Herbiter was one day to come back to Schalke, we'd be more than happy with that. We'd love him to come back. That'd be absolutely fine. You can also understand Herbiter's reasons for leaving, given that it's a World Cup year and he has an outside chance. But it is an issue. Kolasinac came through the academy as well. Mm. He's left. Sané came through. He left. Manuel Neuer came through. He left. There were banners behind the goal today at Schalke saying that, well, you spent 70 million, you spent 90 million, but you've also lost 70% of the club's identity. We want to invest in our academy, in our roots, and not abandon that. I think the stat was that there are only five players from Schalke's academy who remain in the squad. Now, I think, and that's a big issue in Gelsenkirchen.
I think they've got to be realistic, though. They can't have their cake and eat it. I mean, I get that they want to retain an identity, but if they want European football, then they have to be aware that they can't just go.
That's the balance they've got to strike, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think the Herbiter thing is, I think he's allowed to do that. I think to a certain degree that the way it was done wasn't necessarily wonderful, shall we say. But from what I understand, Tedesco didn't want a centre-back that was slow on the ball. And you can see why, because their centre-backs at the moment have to be incredibly quick on the ball. So I think there's probably more of a tactical reasoning to it than maybe a leadership thing. But, hey, Schalke have been doing the same thing wrong for so many years. If a new manager can't come in and make some changes, then, you know, they're not going to go anywhere. So let's see where they are in 6 months.
All right, so what I want to talk about this week is the fact that the Champions League is coming back. And the one team that is new in the Champions League and the Bundesliga, for better or for worse, is RB Leipzig. Now, we'll get to whether they should be playing in the Champions League later. But first, what I wanted to talk about is, what do we think their chances are in the Champions League, in their first Champions League season?
I think they're going to finish third and go straight into Europa League. I think that too many people underestimate other European teams. I don't profess to know a lot about the way that Porto and
Besiktas
and who's the other team?
Monaco
are playing at the moment. Thank you, Matt. But I would hazard a guess that those three teams will give them, I'm not saying more trouble than they expect, because I know that they'll be well prepared. But Monaco, yes, they lost some players, but they are...
Well, I think that's a big caveat, is that...
Yeah, but they're still a good team with a very good coach. So there's that. Besiktas, yeah, everybody thinks if there's not a Turkish team that isn't Fenerbahce or Galatasaray, they're not very good. Well, I don't think that's true in the last 5 years. So they obviously are there for a reason. And Porto, okay, Jose Mourinho isn't their manager anymore and they're not stunning people in the Champions League. But again... You know,
made it to the Champions League quarterfinal.
There are still people, Premier League clubs, that go fishing for players in countries and leagues like Portugal. So I think, as well as they've played in their opening few games, I think on an outside bet with a bit of a hot take, they're going to finish third.
I disagree slightly with John. I think from a purely footballing point of view, I think they'll come second in that group. I think their style of play...
Second and third is a pretty big disagreement, though, because that one goes to the next round and the other goes to the Europa League.
I think they'll make it through. And I think they actually have the potential, footballing-wise, to go relatively far, and in a similar way to Leicester last season, purely because I think that style of football, that transitional football that we talked about before, with the pace they have on the counter-attack with Timo Werner, will take a lot of teams in Europe by surprise. It took a whole season for Premier League teams to work out the way Leicester were playing when they won it. It took, I'd say, three quarters of the season for RB to get found out last season. And I think there'll be some clubs in Europe who simply aren't used to playing against that sort of pace and those aggressive levels of pressing. So I think they certainly have enough to overcome Porto and Besiktas. Albeit me again, like John, not knowing huge amounts about how either of them play. Monaco, we know a bit more about, and I think those the games against them will be particularly interesting. As two very fast teams with similar playing styles, could be two quite open games. So that'll be interesting. And I think from a football point of view, I think for this season at least, they could surprise a few people.
The style of play to me is the most interesting thing, because we talked about it on the podcast last year. The fact that they do have this really fast counterattacking style, that Timo Werner has thrived in that style of play, and so has Naby Keita. I mean, we just saw just an example with a quick free kick, how much of a difference that can make, and that's the type of team that they are. Now, whether they can also continue playing that style of football with extra group stage games over an entire season is also worth watching. But of course, their Champions League season, if they finish second or third, is going to be evaluated over the next 4 months, because that's when they play their six most crucial games of their very short career. Now, speaking of that very short career, Matt, you said off of air that they shouldn't even be here in the first place. Of course, there was that big...
Doesn't sound like something I'd say.
there's obviously this big divide, or this big controversy is the better word, with the fact that RB Salzburg and RB Leipzig, basically two teams who have big influence, whether it's ownership or not, by the same company, are allowed to play in the same competition. That obviously was resolved over the summer. Salzburg is not in the Champions League, so that kind of solves that problem.
Technically, Salzburg were in the Champions League. They just didn't make it past the qualifying round. So technically, two clubs owned 100% by one company were in the same competition. And had they got into the group stage, there was then the chance that the two... could they have been drawn together in the group stage with the seedings? I'm not sure, but certainly the chance.
They would have been, because they're from two different countries, so they could have played the same group.
Or they could certainly have met later on in the competition. But either way, the fact remains that the two were permitted to be in the same competition. It was quite heavily documented last year how they managed to get around that. The fact that the energy drink company is now, technically speaking and legally speaking, only a main sponsor in Salzburg rather than owner.
What's PSG's sponsor is basically Fly Emirates, but it's They're also as a big sponsorship from their
the country of Qatar.
Exactly.
I think they were able to prove that no more than 30% of the club's budget came directly from one sponsor. In this case, Red Bull. However, the where else did Red Bull Salzburg get their budget from? They get it from transfers, usually to the Leipzig based franchise of the same company. And who funds them? Red Bull. So that's the whole issue with UEFA allowing them to compete there in the first place is obviously a huge issue. My personal opinion is that they shouldn't be there. It's blatant distortion of the competition. Think about it. What would happen if the two played each other? How can anyone take that seriously? It's not on. And that's before you get into the issue of these clubs represent neither Salzburg nor Leipzig. They have nothing to do with those cities. They are there to market an energy drink and a lifestyle brand belonging to an international brand. There's that issue. But we are where we are. There's the other issue of German football itself being represented by.
Let's ask that question to Jonathan. Is this a problem that the Bundesliga is represented by RB Leipzig?
I don't think we've got enough time to talk about that. That's a thesis in itself. You can discuss the moral approach. I mean, I don't know where I really stand on this, because I kind of feel like everybody is owned by somebody, and I feel like, you know, Fly Emirates own half of the top three teams, you know, Arsenal, Barcelona, Man City. Everybody's got some sort of ownership with somebody, and I think that there's got to be some conflicting interests every time these big clubs, and Real Madrid, you know, who's to say if those two sides don't, you know, meet each other. The Arsenal play at the Emirates, right? Real Madrid, I'm sure, are sponsored by the Emirates or Fly Emirates, right? So you're kind of like, well, I'm sure somebody somewhere is in a situation where that's conflicting interest. So yes, in Leipzig's case, it's way more stark because they're 100% backed by them. And that's obviously not really acceptable. It's not the kind of football that we want. Certainly not the kind of football that Germany wants. I think that would be the biggest issue. Germany finds itself, like many of its clubs, in a current crisis about what identity it wants to present. And everybody watches the Champions League. So who are the clubs there representing Germany? Well, Leipzig are one of them. On the one hand, they have a club like Borussia Dortmund or Bayern Munich who are 100% this, you know, wow, we're fans, we're all about the right type of ownership. Maybe you could argue slightly different for Bayern, but there's still something there, right? There's still enough there. And then you have a club like Leipzig who don't represent that at all. So it's a conflict of interests, because Germany wants to retain this authentic fan experience with fan importance. But at the same time, it wants to be the Premier League. It wants to be popular. It wants to have more money in the television contracts. That's an impossible situation to be in. And that's why, in some ways, it's very fitting that Leipzig are one of the teams in the Champions League.
It could, had things worked out differently, we could be talking about Red Bull Fortuna Dusseldorf being in the Champions League now. We could be talking about Red Bull 1860 Munich. We could be talking about Red Bull VfL Osnabrück. These were all teams who Red Bull tried to take over but were rejected from. Sampaoli, believe it or not, was another one which they incredibly made an approach for. And I believe the words used at the time when they made that approach were, oh, you're young, cool and exciting too. We're dealing with people here who view football from a completely different mindset.
From a business mindset?
From a purely marketing and a purely business mindset. The Red Bull Leipzig CEO, Oliver Mintzlaff, was talking at the Frankfurt Football Summit in the week, and he incredibly actually came out with the comment, no, fans must not be capitalised upon, must not be monetized. We must maintain and preserve the true and authentic football. It wasn't even a joke. This is the CEO of a Red Bull franchise which happens to be based in the city of Leipzig. That is precisely what they are doing to those fans there who choose to go and watch that, who choose to go and consume that product.
Speaking of who's the fans who are choosing to view that product. We, Matt and I, looked before we started recording. They still, as of Sunday night, they still have not sold out their first Champions League game against Monaco. My question to finish us off, will RB Leipzig sell out a game in the Champions League this season?
They might do it the last minute, but I mean, you have to ask. I don't want to generalise. I don't want to say that every one of the 40,000 people that watch them every week are purely there just to watch the marketing product, just to enjoy the passive entertainment. I'm sure there's some football fans who watch them as well. But you do have to wonder, I mean, that the city of Leipzig hasn't seen European football in decades. And here they are, finally back on the big stage, and tickets are on general sale on the website. So you do have to wonder who is watching them every week, and why are Monaco, Besiktas and FC Porto not attractive enough for them? What do they want exactly? Let's say RB make it to the semi-final and Real Madrid come to town. I'm sure it'll be sold out. So the question has to be asked. These people, most of them don't seem to have been watching football before Red Bull made it to either Division 2 or Division 1, and now they are. So you wonder what reason they're there for. And each to their own. If they have fun watching that, that's absolutely fine. I'm not here, no one's here to judge that. That's absolutely fine. But let's not call it football and football support on the same level as a traditional club.
That'll do it for this week's Tribuna podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and please leave us a friendly review. Also, please like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Jonathan Harding is on Twitter at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's. Matt Ford is Matt_4 and the letter D. And I'm at Davis_Benopdorf. Before we go, here's our stat of the week. Bibi Steinhaus made her refereeing debut in Hertha Berlin's 1-1 draw with Werder Bremen. In doing so, she became the first woman ever to referee a top-flight match in German football. Now that is Bundesliga history. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.